Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Ector County Courthouse closes due to another flooding. Ector County Courthouse closed on Monday due to another severe flooding. A busted water line caused indoor flooding that was isolated to the first floor and the basement, affecting the county clerk's office and the records in the basement. The incident happened around 9:40 a.m. We had to shut down the courthouse today because of the severity of the flooding and because we needed to shut down all of our servers and protect all the IT and protect the county's information technology system, Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said in a press conference outside of the courthouse on Monday. Right now, we're trying to evacuate as much water as possible and do as much damage control as we can. We had to turn off all the water in the courthouse, which was another reason we had to shut down the facility. We do not have bathroom availability, and we also don't have internet, which means no system for any of the county employees. Fortunately, we were able to act quick. It is the second time in the last year that Ector County Courthouse has experienced flooding. Last April, a flood was caused by a failure in the pop-off valve for the hot water expansion tank, causing the courthouse to close all day. Unfortunately, this is not the first time this has happened inside the courthouse, Fawcett said. Our county clerk is always prepared for these kind of situations. There were significant amounts of equipment and tarps all to cover all of their computers. Unfortunately, there were some records that had some damage, but we were able to move as much as possible. We think we preserved a majority of everything. We did have some concerns, which some of the case files down there, some of them were fingerprints of cases and many criminal cases, so that was one of our biggest concerns. We had to make sure we were able to take care of all the criminal case records. Whereas last year's flooding affected most of the courthouse, Monday's incident was isolated to just the first floor and basement. This is a different animal, Fawcett said, when comparing last year's flooding to Monday's. Last year's incident began in the third floor and seeped into all three floors. This one is much more isolated, but the more concerning element is our servers and our records are the majority of what's downstairs, so it's a different type of flood than what we faced last year. Fawcett said that no courtrooms were affected by the flooding. It's just one isolated area of the first floor, the county clerk's office, and in the basement, so it does not affect any of the courtrooms. No courtrooms were involved in this, Fawcett said. No trials were also scheduled to take place on Monday. We were fortunate that we had no trials today, Fawcett said. We had just finished with some jury paneling that took place on the third floor. As soon as they were done, we removed everyone, including the employees. It's just a safety hazard when you don't have functioning bathrooms. It's not a good condition for a workspace. Odessa Teen Court was canceled for the day due to the closure. Fawcett said he expects the courthouse to open back up at 8 a.m. Tuesday. We do anticipate that we should be able to have everything taken care of, Fawcett said. We're going to see how damaged the facility and the clerk's office, but we should be back up and running Tuesday. Ector County Building Maintenance Director Billy Kerrigan said he was at the Ector County Annex on Monday when he heard about the flooding at the courthouse. I was at the annex and got a call from the clerk's office saying that they had water coming down from the ceiling and ceiling tiles caving in. Upon arrival, we saw that we had massive flooding going on in the first floor, which leaked down into the basement, so we had quite a bit of water coming through the building. So we shut off the water to the entire building in order to isolate the leak. Then we had to shut down. The problem with what happened is it's a plumbing issue that is what its cap that broke loose. It was an old iron fitting that had deteriorated to the point that it gave way. We have just old systems in the building. We're always having to maintain and update some of the plumbing. It's always something that's just breaking loose. This is the second time we've had flooding in the last 2 years. We had flooding last year from the room in the third floor. We're still doing carpet replacement from the last flood. The county clerk's office carpet was just replaced a few years ago. It's not just a matter of replacing a ceiling tile or fixing a plumbing leak. It creates all kinds of other damage. Over the years, Ector County Courthouse has been showing signs of deterioration. Ector County has been looking at replacing the current courthouse. Last month, county commissioners took the first step toward a new courthouse, with three voting to move forward to design a building concept and a request for qualifications and specifications and master services agreement for the building of a new Ector County courthouse. More details on that can be read at https://www.oaoa.com/local-news/. County takes first step toward new courthouse / This has been happening for years, Fawcett said on Monday's flooding. It goes back to the condition of the courthouse when it was built, and there has not been a significant update in the facility. This is why we're looking at a new facility. It's why we went out on a bond in the November 2025 election, because we're seeing these things that are expediting. We have issues with our elevators literally every day. The building has simply served its function ability. We're at the lifespan of this facility, and it's time to build another one. This is one of the many reasons we need a new courthouse. It's no longer functioning. Whenever you can't continue to hold court day after day and reset hearings or vacate a premises, it's not conducive. This, along with the elevators, along some of the health concerns, we're going to push for a new courthouse. The community needs it. We're long past due. We're sinking significant amounts of funds into this courthouse. Sooner or later, we're going to realize there's no more lipstick that we can put on this pig. It's a pig, and no amount of lipstick will change that. We have to get going right now. Make-A-Wish Odessa Family Power Sports to celebrate local wish child. Make-A-Wish Serving Odessa is pleased to announce a donation from Odessa Family Power Sports in the amount of $10,000 to help fund wishes for local children with critical illnesses. In addition to this generous contribution, Odessa Family Power Sports is hosting a celebration for local wish child Robert Galindo. Robert was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2019. He bravely battled the disease during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, and with the hope of receiving a wish from Make-A-Wish, now cancer-free, this soon-to-be 18-year-old enjoys riding bikes and playing video games with his friends. His one true wish is to have a Polaris RZR, a news release said. The event is scheduled at 3 p.m. Tuesday, June 4th at Odessa Power Family Power Sports, 4306 Andrews Highway, where together with Make-A-Wish Serving Odessa, they will reveal and celebrate Robert's wish come true. Make-A-Wish Serving Odessa extends its sincere appreciation to Odessa Family Power Sports for their generosity and support in making wishes a reality. This event is an opportunity to celebrate the collective impact on the community and its dedicated partners in fulfilling the mission to make a wish. Texas legislators want to help property owners deal with squatters, but the changes could affect tenants. During a hearing at the Texas Capitol earlier this month, property owners shared the horror stories they've experienced with people who refuse to leave their properties. Terry Boyette said she left her home in Dallas for a few weeks last year to deal with a family issue in Florida and came back to find that someone had broken into her house and stayed there. She filed for eviction and tried to follow the legal process on her own to save money, but ended up hiring a lawyer because it became too taxing. It took her 7 months to gain control of her home. The house was damaged, and she's still trying to get her insurance company to pay for the repairs. A couple from San Antonio, Abram Mendez and Judith Matthews, said a contractor who was supposed to remodel their house stayed there and refused to leave. Even though the couple said they could prove they owned the property, the man lived at the house for more than 3 months. Texas senators called the May 15th hearing to review state laws related to squatters or people who illegally occupy a property. They said the law should help pay property owners kick out unwanted occupants more easily. It's unclear how widespread the problem is. Senator Paul Benincourt, Republican Houston, showed a mix of news reports on similar cases at the beginning of the hearing and said, "The magnitude of it is shocking, but acknowledged there isn't any official state data." Stuart Campbell, a lawyer with the Dallas Eviction Advocacy Center, said, "It's not a big-scale problem at all," and questioned whether the issue should be a priority for legislators. "It's extremely rare," he said, and added that cases like these have gained attention recently after going viral on social media. While lawmakers didn't say what proposals they might pursue during next year's legislative sessions to address the issue, laws that were recently passed in states like Florida or Georgia were mentioned as potential models. Housing experts say such changes could end up weakening tenants' rights at a time when evictions have been climbing above pre-pandemic levels. Here's what you need to know about Texas laws regarding squatters, the recourses available for property owners and occupants, and what changes lawmakers might pursue next year. Who is a squatter? Texas laws don't have a specific definition of who is considered a squatter, said Stuart Campbell, a lawyer with the Dallas Eviction Advocacy Center. Rusty Adams, a research attorney at the Real Estate Center at Texas A&M University, described a squatter during the hearing as someone who settles on property without any legal claim or title. What happens when there's a dispute over the ownership or occupancy of a property? Property owners have to file for eviction when they want to remove someone from their property. Adams said law enforcement may remove a trespasser, but if the person claims to have a right to be there, like claiming to have ownership of the property or a valid rent agreement, they have to stop the process until a court can confirm it. When can an occupant claim ownership over a property? While people who illegally enter a house don't have any specific rights in Texas, Adams explained, some people who have lived in a place for years may be able to claim ownership of the property through a process called adverse possession. People can make an adverse possession claim in the following circumstances: if they have at least some documents to support their ownership claim and have lived at that property for at least 3 consecutive years. If they don't have any documents, they can still make a claim if they have paid taxes on the property and lived there for at least 5 consecutive years. If they don't have any documents or have paid any taxes, they can make a claim if they have cultivated or made improvements on the land and the property is no bigger than 160 acres and they have lived there at least 10 consecutive years. During the hearing, Benincourt and Adams said changing the rules for adverse possession claims was not their focus since these laws are not meant to protect trespassers. What happens after an eviction is filed? Texas laws require landlords to notify re-enters 3 days before filing for eviction. The case then must go to court between 10 and 21 days after the petition is filed and at least 6 days after the citation was served. When property owners claim there was a forcible entry, owners can file for eviction immediately after giving the occupants an oral or written notice to vacate. The process would go through a similar timeline as with a tenant eviction before reaching the trial phase. It could take longer depending on the court's waiting time or if the occupant requests a jury or seeks legal counsel. If the court sides with the property owner, the occupant has 6 days to vacate the property and to decide whether they want to appeal, which would extend the legal process. Adam said evictions laws fall short when property owners are dealing with trespassers. When property owners are facing an occupant who doesn't want to leave, they have to prove to the court they own that place. Even if they do, the eviction process can still face another delay. An occupant could falsely claim to be a tenant, or they could have acted in good faith if they unknowingly signed a fraudulent lease with a fake landlord. The eviction laws as they are written are designed for getting tenants out of a property. I know we have some people who are purported tenants, and we may have some ways to deal with that, but when dealing with a pure trespasser, these laws are not working because they put the burden on the property owner to show that this person doesn't have to be there, Adams said. What changes do state laws want to make? The Senate Committee on Local Government called for the May 15th hearing to review existing laws, expedite the process for removing squatters, and strengthen the rights of property owners. I don't know what theory or leftist, progressive, socialist reality started this, but it is going to end when the bill is passed in Texas, Bennencourt said. However, lawmakers don't propose any specific changes during the hearing. Some solutions proposed by attorneys who testified were to create new guidelines to help law enforcement officials when dealing with trespassers, as well as new standards to determine whether a person has a right to be on a property and remove them if they don't. They also suggested expediting the eviction process in certain cases, creating criminal penalties for trespassers, and helping property owners recoup any financial losses. New laws passed in Florida and Georgia this year were mentioned as possible models. In Florida, a property owner now only needs to provide a statement saying an occupant is not authorized to be there and proof of ownership for an eviction to move forward. Doing so will allow law enforcement to vacate any occupants immediately. The occupant may file a civil suit after that, and if they show they were wrongfully removed, they may regain access to the property and recover costs and damages involved with eviction. Georgia created a new timeline for occupants to show they have a right to be on a property. They now have 3 business days after receiving a citation to present proof like a lease or legal agreement. If they do, the case must go before a court within a week. The law also created non-jury trials for evictions and added monetary relief to make up for any losses property owners might incur. How could changes impact Texas tenants? According to Texas Housers, while federal and state protections were able to temporarily halt the rising tide of evictions during the height of the pandemic, the end of those protections led to a rise in eviction rates in 2023 and 2022. Eviction numbers are now higher than they were before the pandemic. The legal rights and protections conferred to tenants in Texas during eviction proceedings are limited compared to other states, according to a report of the Keep Harris Housed Coalition. Beyond the formal legal process, tenant households experienced evictions regularly through a myriad of landlord intimidation tactics, the report said. It is illegal to cut off utilities, restrict entry with a padlock, or change door locks and deny a tenant re-entry into their unit, but landlords frequently use these tactics to encourage the tenant to leave the property without a court order or force tenants to go into debt to gain entry into their home. Making changes in eviction, Texans' laws could further limit tenant rights, Campbell said. Changing the time or manner in which a landlord must give notice to an occupant before evicting them could result in treating tenants and trespassers the same way. Evictions traumatize children, impoverish families, and diminish their ability to gain secure, stable housing in the future, and they happen disproportionately to Black, Latina, and Latino and immigrant communities, Texan Hauser said. The organization has advocated for offering tenants more access to legal counsel, which is said is a proven, cost-effective, and essential resource for tenants facing eviction. Across the county, 83% of landlords have attorneys, but only 4% of tenants do, according to National Coalition for a Civil Right to Counsel.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud. Gatlin Brothers honor three impactful Odessa High music educators by staff report. The Grammy-winning Gatlin Brothers recently participated in a special tribute to three longtime music educators who made a lasting impact on generations of Odessa High students. Rudy Gatlin, the youngest of the trio, served as EMC of the event at the high school, honoring the late Dr. Maurice Alfred, OHS Choral Director, 1956 to 1973, the late Bill Dean, OHS Band and Orchestra Director, 1959 to 1981, and Suzanne Medlin, OHS Choral Director from 1973 to 2007, and the first female Class A5A High School Choir Director in Texas. Brothers Larry and Steve had their travel delayed by the storms across the area, although Larry was able to join in, according to the Odessa American. It's always good to come back to Odessa, Rudy told the crowd. It's good to see old friends and new friends we made through the years. These honorees are most certainly some wonderful people, impactful, extraordinary in our lives. I'm so honored to be able to stand here and talk about them. He added, I'll go on to record as saying, this is the most talent-rich region in the country, West Texas, especially Odessa, where there have been so many who can sing, play, act, and dance. Maybe there's something in the water. I think it had to do with the teachers. About 100 family, friends, and former students attended the event and learned more about each music educator's life and work. Listen to this story at 2 p.m. daily via the Recording Library of West Texas radio station at www.recordinglibrary.org/livestream. Meet Atmos Energy Vice President of Public Affairs, Brandi Price, by Kim Delapina. Brandi Price, Vice President of Public Affairs for Atmos Energy, has spent over a decade with the company and believes in empowering women in the workplace. Price focuses on mentorship, fostering a culture of support, and providing guidance to women who pursue leadership roles. I'm a promoter, she told Midland Times, promotes actively support others to help them achieve their goals. According to Harvard Business School, they can be formal mentors or friends who introduce others to key contacts. They also understand other people's brands and share those attributes with others as a way to promote them. Price says her leadership is rooted in key principles, including authenticity. Be true to yourself, she says. Price says she believes leaders can grow alongside their teams by investing time in others. She also believes in setting high expectations for herself and those she leads. She said, surround yourself with great folks who want to learn and give them the support they need to be successful. Price said, I always wanted to extend my hand to others so they grow. Price told Midland Times she tries to foster a culture of support and growth at Atmos Energy and through her volunteerism. Stay grounded, but chase your dreams. You might just catch them, she said. Atmos Energy is the nation's largest natural gas-only distributor. It serves more than 3 million distribution customers in over 1,400 communities across 8 states, located primarily in the South. Find more information at https://www.atmosenergy.com. Meet Midland's new at-large city councilman, Eric Davidson, by Delisa Brown. In an interview with Midland Times, Midland at-large City Councilman Eric Davidson discussed securing the at-large seat. MT, what message would you like to convey to your supporters and constituents who helped make this victory possible? First off, thank you. Thank you to everyone that supported this campaign, and thank you to all of those that voted and made this happen. This campaign was focused around building toward the future for Midland, and the city of Midland showed in this election that they want to keep moving forward. I have mentioned this quite a bit over the last 2 months, but I am excited about the future of Midland. I want to help build Midland's vision for the future, ensure that we are creating a place for that next generation to come back to, and focus on driving businesses and growth to our community. I am ready to get to work for everyone. MT, were there any individuals or groups that had a significant impact on your candidacy, or anyone you would like to specifically thank? There were an abundant amount of individuals and groups that were significant to this campaign, and I know there isn't room here to name them all, but thank you for everything y'all did. I want to thank my wife, Casey, and my family for their sacrifices and prayers. This campaign truly became a full family affair. I had the opportunity to knock on over 1,000 doors in Midland, and oftentimes I was bringing along 1 to 4 kids with me. We had a blast doing it, and thank you to everyone that helped knock on doors and campaign for me during the campaign. Thank you to the Harpers who helped manage the campaign, host events, and help sacrifice their time for my family in this campaign. Thank you to the former leaders who helped guide me, encourage me, and provide their wisdom, and I can't wait to continue working with y'all in this new capacity. Last year, I had a great core team helping with my social media and marketing, and this campaign wouldn't have been successful without y'all. MT, what does this win mean to you personally and professionally? This means a lot to me. I started this campaign as a concerned citizen, husband, and father that wanted to step in and help lead this city into the future. I can't wait to start having conversations with more Midlanders about what they care about and what they want to see from their city. I am and will be focused on helping improve the city and am ready to get to work for Midland.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the local news from Odessa American for June 1st and 2nd. Pets of the Week. Tristan, a four-month-old female husky mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. And Lucas, an 8-week-old male kitten, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Tristan or Lucas or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 2230 West Sycamore or call 432-257-4311. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contracts along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $75. To help support Humane Society of Odessa, donations are welcome. Donations will go towards kennels, cat house, and adoption center. Bonham Twirler makes PHS varsity squad. A Bonham middle school eighth grader is poised to become a varsity freshman twirler at Permian High School next fall. Laniqua Clay, 14, has been a twirler at the middle school for 2 years. Principal Kimmy Smith said this is just one of several highlights happening at the campus. We have lots of kids that are going to OC Techs and OCA and New Tech next year, so just an upward trajectory. A lot of great growth and great things happening at Bonham, Smith said. Twirlers at Bonham perform at pep rallies, football games, and during parades, such as the Christmas parade downtown. Clay is also a clarinetist in the advanced band and plans to continue that at Permian. She's only been twirling for 2 years. I saw the majorettes at pep rallies, and it seemed like something fun to do. It looked really cool, so I wanted to try it, Clay said. Trying out was nerve-wracking, especially for the solo part. She was nervous because there were other people there, and they're good, so it's challenging. When she found out she got on the varsity squad at Permian High School, it was a wow moment. Especially to be a freshman and make it, I was really, really surprised, Clay said. She expects being on the Permian squad will be similar to Bonham, but more challenging because she'll be learning new tricks and more routines. She enjoys twirling because it's just fun. If she has a performance coming up, she'll practice after school at home every other day. Twirling helps Clay get things off her mind. Like, if I came into twirling practice and I had something on my mind, I'd just leave it at the door, and I don't think about it for that whole practice, Clay said. Clay is in band. She was a dancer, but stopped when she got into majorettes. She's also in AVID, which stands for Advancement Via Individual Determination. She's excited but nervous to be going to Permian. It's a big school, but I'm excited to meet new people and new friends, Clay said. She has really liked the band at Bonham because it has been very successful. Clay also will be in band at PHS. She'll be practicing all summer. All of June is competition season, and then after that we'll have summer band, Clay said. She added that she's excited to have made the varsity twirling team this year, and she hopes to make it again next year. I'm really excited to be a freshman on the team, Clay said. Smith said she thinks it's fabulous that Clay made it to varsity as a freshman. One thing that we do talk to students about is setting goals and setting things for the future. She wanted to try out. She wanted to be on the twirling line at Permian, and for her to reach her goal and surpass it and to be on the varsity line is excellent, Smith said. It's a pretty big deal, Bonham band director Hector Izagiri said. He said there have been a lot of great majorettes in the program, but none have jumped this far, so it's really great. Izagiri said Clay is a great student as well. She not only strives in her academics, but does well for us in band class, and obviously she's done great in the twirling. She's an overall great student and a great example and type of kid we have here at Bonham, he added. Clay said she feels like she's a role model for other students. At one point, she went to school in San Angelo, but came back. We were glad to plug her right into band, and she fit right in, right where she left off. I know she was glad to be back. We were most certainly glad to have her back. I think it was a different experience that she had in San Angelo, Izagiri said. The advanced band, which Clay is part of, has earned 17 consecutive sweepstakes with all judges giving them a 1. The concert band, which is 3 years old, has received 3 years of sweepstakes as well. We're doing really well. We went to competition in San Antonio. We took 3 bands and all bands had outstanding performances. The advanced band was overall outstanding. We got a really tall trophy, taller than some of the kids here. We were really excited about that award, Izagiri said. Clay said it was fun to be part of that band. She learned a lot from the experience and learned from her mistakes to become a better clarinet player. She added that it has helped her in her classes, especially algebra.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.